Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, race fans. How the hell are you? Steve Big Sweat Billmeyer here, hosting this new episode of Racing with Big Sweat, the show that focuses on local short track drivers across the country. Looking forward to having a good show tonight. We got first up, gentleman from up in New York, doing real good with his modified. We'll have him and his driver on, Mr. John Visconti. And also a young lady tearing up the tracks out west in Boise, Idaho, Miss Hannah Newhouse. But first off, let me introduce you to the people that will be sitting in with me tonight. First, my producer and my friend, the man that makes all this possible, Mr. CJ Sports. CJ, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here. I've had an opportunity to hear all of the participants in tonight's show speak on other shows here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. So I am very excited to have the opportunity to sit in and listen to them all talk again tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. I'm glad to catch up with them and see how their season's been going since the last time I talked with them. And also sitting in with me tonight, my usual co-host, Chris Yellow Caution Flag Creighton, has a previous engagement tonight. So I recruited another guy that's doing real good with his shows, and he's also part of the 110 Nation Sports Network. Man, matter of fact, started out the season this year as my co-host and has since gone on to bigger and better things. Let's welcome Mike Perricone. Mike, you there, buddy? How about it, Mike? You there? Talk to me, Mike.
Must not be him. I must have John and CJ both in the studio. I can't remember Mike's number, so both your guests are in the studio, though.
All right. Let's get right on to it. Our guest right now is a gentleman who owns a modified team racing in the Northeast, an asphalt modified, which is very exciting, very popular in the Northeast. So let's find out how his season has progressed so far. Help me welcome Mr. John Visconti. John, how you doing tonight, dude?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having us back on. I appreciate it. I love your show and love what you do for us. Thank you.
Glad to have you on. Who'd you bring with you tonight?
Our number one driver, Mr. CJ Lehman. He's on the other line right now. And I have to tell you, I'm more than proud of what this guy has done for us over the course of the season. He's an unbelievable driver. Great, great with the fans. And we're going to find out how good he is on the radio. So here we go.
Yeah, we had him on. He called in the last time you were on. How you doing tonight, CJ?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Steve. How are you?
I'm finer than hen's teeth. Having a good time. John, you've had a pretty interesting season so far, especially here lately. Let me know what's going on. How your streak's been going?
Well, we've been doing real well right from the beginning of the season, like we had spoken earlier on. It's been a little bit of a roller coaster ride for us, mostly in the good. But we did have two bad in the bad column. With opening night, you knew that we had broken a motor and we had to switch motors out. But our Visconti Motorsports crew changed the motor out right there in the pits. We missed practice and the heats. We wound up starting last and we had to work our way through the field. And we wound up finishing third with CJ at the wheel, which was a great way to start, a good and a bad way to start our season. And then a few weeks back, unfortunately, while battling for the lead, we wound up with a stuck throttle, and CJ unfortunately took a real hard hit into the first turn wall and basically destroyed the entire car.
Hey guys,
man, oh man. Well, how big a setback was that? I know you've got a super crew. Tell us how quick you got that car rebuilt and back in action.
Well, I have to tell you, our car chief and overall good guy is Scott's dad, CJ's dad, Scott. And we left the track on a flatbed because the car couldn't roll into the trailer. One of our competitors by the name of Terry Stiles, who actually won that night, offered us a flatbed to bring it back to the shop out in Mastic, Long Island. And by 10 o'clock in the morning, the crew, led by Scott Lehman, had the car completely stripped and bare and ready for delivery to Brad over at Northeast.
Wow. That's getting on the job. So when did you get the car back?
Got the car back 6 days later on a Friday, I believe, about 4 in the afternoon, and the guys were sitting there ready with tools in hand. CJ, his dad Scott, Fat Pat, Brian, the entire crew, Bill, everybody was there, and the car was put together and ready to go on Saturday night. Unfortunately, we got rained out going to the track that called the show because we had heavy torrential downpours, which in an aspect maybe it was God's will, because as much as, you know, we put that car back together as quickly as possible, it gave us an extra week to go over the car with a fine-tooth comb like we do every other week just to make sure the car would be, you know, competitive on the track once we actually got there.
Oh, wow. That's pretty impressive. But, veering off the subject a little bit, you're going to have to describe the dude named Fat Pat, because I got a mental image, but I want to hear.
Well, I'm gonna let CJ chime in here and tell us, when I first met Fat Pat, I heard a lot about him, along with all the rest of the guys on the crew, you know, Timmy Halpin, Stephen Halpin, all those guys, and when Fat Pat's name came up, which I never met before, I was in for a rude awakening. So I'll let CJ kind of describe Fat Pat to you.
Well,
tell us about it, CJ.
Fat Pat is not actually large. Fat Pat is all skin and bones. We did not even actually give Pat that nickname. The nickname was given to him by late Tom Baldwin Sr. I believe because he eats like he should be 1,000 pounds, but the guy never gained a pound. So that'd be somebody else's description on how the nickname came about, because I didn't give it to him, but certainly sucked, and that's what we call him every time we talk to him.
That's an interesting story, and probably guess it was nowhere near the mental picture I had. Dude's got a metabolism like a hummingbird, huh?
Yep.
That's right.
Well, good to hear. Here's the man I was trying to introduce earlier. A partner in crime tonight, Mike Perricone. Say hello, Mike.
Hey, Steve. Hi, guys. I'm sorry, I didn't have trouble connecting you tonight. How you doing?
Hey, sound like my single life. I have trouble connecting, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe you're breaking up, Mike.
How you doing, JP?
There we go.
Yep, we're very good. CJ and I both say hello. CJ's on the other line out in his hometown. And we're looking forward to doing the show with you guys tonight.
Good enough. You're in three different locations now. Four counting the host.
Yes.
So,
yes.
That's great. Hey, CJ, how you doing?
Good, Mike. How are you?
All right, hanging in there, bud.
Good to hear.
Where are you at, CJ? I noticed you had a 704 area code. That's Western North Carolina, isn't it?
I live in Shirley, New York, on Long Island, but I had a cameo in Indian Trail, North Carolina for a couple months, right out of high school. So I got the phone number down there and decided it was easier to keep it than have to change the number and give everybody my new number. So.
I was wondering about that. I know where Indian Trail is. It's right outside of Charlotte near Matthews, around Matthews and Monroe. What was it like? What went through your mind when you realized you had a stuck throttle in that modified?
Well, it's probably not fit for radio. But it was more so, wow, you know, this is going to hurt. At that point, you know, things kind of go into slow motion. You know, for what you think in your own mind, it seemed like it took an hour for me to get from the straightaway to the turn one wall, but, you know, it just, at the point in time of contact, everything happened so quick. You know, once I stopped moving, you know, collected my thoughts for a few seconds there, and then I had to answer the guys that were yelling at me over the radio, trying to find out if I was all right. But with a driver's mentality, I was more concerned about how bad the race car was. I knew I was okay. I had all my fingers and toes. I just wanted to know how quick we were going to be able to get this thing fixed.
That's pretty interesting. You said the thought came through your mind, this is going to hurt. Is that a common thought among drivers when you get in a situation like a stuck throttle?
You know, really, I've been fortunate enough throughout my career to not have many situations like that. So it was kind of a first for me. I would imagine so. You know, if it would happen at a place like, say, Loudoun or Bristol, you know, that's you're going a lot faster. Luckily,
yeah.
I mean, it was a bad situation. Luckily, we're racing at a Riverhead Raceway, a quarter mile. You're not carrying as big a speed as you would at a big racetrack. So, you know, all the safety equipment did its job, and, you know, I thank God that I walked away from that.
That's pretty interesting. It made me remember when I worked with Kenny Schrader at Hendrick Motorsports. He had the same thing happen. He had a stuck throttle going down the front stretch, and that was all he had time to say on the radio was, this is going to hurt. That kind of struck me as being odd. What goes through your mind, John, in a situation like that? Or, you know, I know you're concerned for your driver and everything, but does your focus shift to how bad the car is and how bad is it going to hit my pocketbook?
Well, to be very honest with you, my first and foremost thought was making sure that CJ was okay. He did come up on the radio and, you know, speak back to us and say that he was fine. Quite honestly, I never had a doubt in my mind. The financial issue never really came into play because I knew that the crew was going to be, the minute the car came off, I mean, basically, the car was coming off the track and the crew, including our crew chief, Mike Lemura, were assessing the damage to see, you know, what we needed to do. And ironically, as the car was getting dragged back to our pits on a double hook, which is not a good sight, my cell phone rings and it's Tommy Baldwin. And Tommy's like, how bad's the car? I mean, literally, CJ didn't even get out of the ambulance yet. They checked him out for medical reasons to make sure he was okay. CJ wasn't even back at the car yet, and Tommy Baldwin was on the phone with me. And he's like, how bad's the car? He goes, we're not going to miss a week. And he gave me a whole rundown of things that we had to do to make sure that car was back for the next Saturday. So with the help of Tommy Baldwin Racing, with the help of IGA, with the help of Applebee's, the financial burden wasn't really a concern of mine. My main concern was if CJ is okay and how quick we can get the car back on the track. Not only back on the track, but back on the track looking as good, running as good, and, you know, performing as well. My thought in my head, I think the only thing that, which was I was proven wrong, was the fact that CJ may be a little gun-shy going out the first time and going down the front straightaway again, but he completely dispelled that thought because he just got on the damn thing and rode it like it was, you know, like he's been driving that car all year long. So I got to give a lot of credit to the crew, a lot of credit to CJ for not, you know, he got back on the horse and never looked back. And of course our sponsors, without them, you know, we wouldn't be where we are. Last weekend, the weekend that we went back to racing, we decided to shake the bugs out of the car and raced at Riverhead on Saturday, loaded up, left at like 4 in the morning, and drove up to Evergreen Speedway to run against their division of modifieds, which typically, if you know the divisions, our particular type of modified, which is an asphalt modified, but there's so many different types of rules packages. We knew that we would be underpowered with the package that we have, and CJ just got in the car and was, when I say only a tenth and a half off of the pole winner, is phenomenal considering the fact that the car really wasn't supposed to be running against those cars with 50 or 60 more horsepower. So to answer your question, CJ is completely race ready. The car is completely race ready, and you know, with the help of our crew, I don't think we missed a beat, to be quite honest with you.
Well, Jaden, how does CJ get along with Tommy Baldwin? Because the first thing Tommy Baldwin thinks of is how's the car. What about how's CJ?
Well, he already knew CJ was fine. He already knew that. And as far as the relationship between Tommy and CJ, if it wasn't for Tommy, I would not have known about CJ. Tommy called me up mid-November at the end of last season, which ended in September or October, and Tommy calls me up.
Obviously, I'm kidding, but you know what I'm saying. He said to you was, you know, how's the car, you know.
Well, he knew that he knew CJ was okay, and his main concern was not missing a race, and we didn't. Basically, you know, we had a rain out, but we would not have missed that race. But if it wasn't for Tommy calling me up in November, knowing that I put a modified team together and saying, you know, CJ is going to drive for you, I was like, CJ who? You know? And then I did my due diligence and my research, and I was never going to say no to Tommy if he said Mr. Magoo was getting in the car. You know, that's Tommy. So I'm glad that he twisted my arm a little bit and that I listened to him, because going forward for the next 5-10 years, hopefully CJ and I and the rest of the crew are going to be together doing something in some class in NASCAR.
Yeah.
There you go. John, explain your relationship with Tommy Baldwin and Tommy Baldwin Racing and how it came about.
Well, it goes back to the 70s with my dad. My dad, Cookie Visconti, was a, I want to call him a short track, you know, local legend over here out on Long Island and, you know, in New York. And although Tommy's father didn't race against my father, my dad raced late models and Tommy Sr. ran modifieds, we were always at the track at the same time. So therefore, Tommy and I grew up, you know, somewhat like, you know, pit rats together. And when I had gotten into the Legends division probably 6 or 7 years ago, I put a call down to Tommy and he said, you know, I said, want to buy me a set of tires? You know, kidding around, sort of, in a way. And, you know, a week later, there was a set of tires at my shop. And that's how the TBR, Tommy Baldwin Racing, and the Visconti Motorsports Racing team kind of got together. And then, you know, Tommy is like a mentor to me. You obviously know where Tommy has come from and where he's gotten to. Yeah. And his business plan is for the, you know, the small business owner, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he's been around a lot longer than a lot of the other small business guys. He's probably the only guy left. I mean, he has a charter deal now. He's running competitive cars. He's finishing well. He's got good equipment. And it took him a long time. And Tommy and I speak, I want to say once or twice, 3 times a month, about my future, our future, the team's future, CJ's future. And the one thing that he tells me is there's a lot of guys watching television on Sundays wishing they were where I am right now, meeting him, because they didn't do it right. They took on too much and they bit off more than they can chew. Take baby steps and then you'll just go a lot further. And that's the plan, you know.
Other than the financial part of it, what else does Tommy bring to your operation?
Knowledge.
As far as knowledge and setup tips and things like that, maybe?
Well, I have to be honest with you, and CJ, you can attest to this. Tommy kind of gives us the enough rope to hang ourselves, and if he sees that we're not, he wants us to learn. You know, there's that old saying, you know, take a man fishing and he'll eat for a day. You know, teach him to fish, he'll eat for the rest of his life. I think he's trying to figure out a way for us to, you know, eat for the rest of our lives, because he gives us just enough information for us to make our own assessments and our own, you know, data and adjustments on things. And if it's wrong, he'll be the first one to tell me. But if it's right, you know, it's a little bit of a notch on our belt that we kind of did it on our own, rather, with him guiding us. He wants us to learn, not just be told what to do.
That's a good backup plan, isn't it, Mike?
Yep. And, I know the team, and I know John's years from the Legends, too, and he does the same thing. And with CJ, I knew it was going to be a good team because, CJ had run Chargers, and, you know, when CJ moved up with John, I knew it was going to be a good team.
Yeah, it sounds like it has worked out pretty good. For CJ, I'll get to you in a second, but for your driver to slam the wall with a stuck throttle and immediately come on the radio and say, hey, I'm okay, and walk away and everything, that's the signal, that's a sign of a pretty strong chassis. Who builds your chassis?
Well, it's a Northeast destroyer. Brad does a great job up there in the Northeast, and I'm not real familiar with the differences compared to a regular destroyer or a Hirschman destroyer or anything like that. But they're all basically destroyers. And Troyer does a great job building a great race car, very safe race car, and NASCAR with all of their safety standards. It's a complete package. It's not just the car builder, it's not just NASCAR, It's everybody involved that has our safety in mind. When I say our, meaning drivers, it's definitely taken a few steps forward in the past 10 years or so.
I hear you. I've been reading a little bit about an incident involving the infamous chrome horn, Mr. Teddy Christopher, and a little on-track that he had with another driver. And it said that the track had been announcing in the driver's meeting for 3 or 4 weeks that if there was any contact under caution or after the race, that it would be an immediate disqualification and all this. And Ted Christopher hit the guy after the race to show his displeasure on how the guy raced him for the win. And all the track did was fine Ted $200, and they're making him start at the rear of his heat and his feature instead of the chance to qualify the next event, which is pretty much sounds like NASCAR flip-flopping on the rules and stuff. First John and then CJ, what do y'all think of this incident and the way it was handled?
My take on it, to be very honest with you, is I've read as much as I could read that's been online, and they always say there's three sides to a story. I like Ted a lot. I think he's a great wheelman. I also respect the track for their decisions. It's an unfortunate situation. If we were put in that situation on either end, whether we were the guy that did the hitting or the guy that had gotten hit, you look at it in two different perspectives. Do I think it's right, after a race to be over for somebody to show their displeasure by running their car into another one? No, absolutely not. And I believe CJ would say the same thing. But as far as the light fine, well, maybe it's, we all know Teddy Christopher. We know he's an aggressive driver and he's very good. Was the fine too light? That's not really for me to say. It's not my call. He brings a lot of people to the track. He has a lot of fans. It's good to see him run from the back to the front because I'm sure he can get there. I'm sure if it ever happens again, it won't be such a light fine, and it'll be a little bit more of a more than a wrist slapping. But I think at this point, the penalty probably fits the crime.
I hear that. What do you think, CJ?
Well, you don't have to agree with me, by the way, CJ.
Good, because I wasn't going to.
Talk after the show's over, by the way, me and you.
I'm not real familiar with the actual situation that you're speaking of. You know, and to be honest, as a driver, it's not really much of my business what goes on with Teddy Christopher and, you know, any of the other drivers. We're all out there to do our own thing and all go there for the same reason, win races. However, I don't agree with crashing in the back of other cars, whether it's a little bumper shot or much more than that, after the caution flag is out or the checkered flag is out, especially after the checkered. You know, some guys start unbuckling from the point in time that they get that car slowed down in turn one right after the line. So, you know, there's danger possibly there. You know, and for the most part, when you drive a race car, you need to step into the same league as the big guys. You know, you can get out of your car, you'll have to talk man-to-man, man-to-woman, whatever it may be, woman-to-woman, you know, but sometimes the emotions get the best of you. You get out, stomp around, screaming, yell. That's part of the sport. And without that part of this sport, it's better. There's no passion. There's no emotion. If I'm not happy, no. You know, we all put our blood, sweat, and tears, money into these things. And, you know, I feel as if it's okay to not so much have that bad boy, but, you know, stretch your feelings and off the great track. And, you know, I think that the great sweat this year, Eddie Ciccone and Tom Gatz and John Elwood and the race director, Scott Tapley, have kind of let that flow to an extent. You know, where if you get out of your corner and you're displeased with somebody and you voice your opinion, that's one thing. They've been keeping the fighting and the antics out of it, and, you know, they're keeping it clean. So I applaud them for that, and I think that's how it should be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like to see drivers show some emotions. I don't, you know, I agree to an extent with what he did and everything, and I wouldn't have a problem with it. But all the stuff that I read about it, nobody ever described exactly what happened. You know, whether it was a light tap to say, hey, I'm not real happy with that, whether he banged him enough to give him whiplash to say, hey, I'm really pissed off. You know, there's a line drawn there between, you know, a little and a lot. And I'm on the little side, not so much the lot side, but I think it's good for drivers to show emotion. It gets the fans involved and stuff like that. What do you think about it, Mike?
I've seen it happen at Riverhead at times, and at, you know, on television or whatever, but, you know, it's part of it at times. As long as it's under control, there's no big problem. What happens, though, is if it carries over into other weeks, that's when it becomes an issue. And I know of one instance, I won't name names, but I know of one instance where the situation went on for basically the whole season between two different teams, and that was a bad team. And but you know, if it's just one incident, one race, and then, you know, you leave the track and it's forgotten about, that's part of it. That can be put off promotion, you know. But you know, I've seen it happen both ways, and it's, you know, it can happen, but like. And it's the makeup of the drivers, too. I mean, I know CJ, and CJ is not emotional to where he becomes uncontrollable, you know. And there are other guys that have to be held back, and, you know, it depends on the person. It really depends on the person. But as long as you keep it under control, and, you know, there's a give and take both ways, it's not a bad thing. It just becomes an issue if it's drawn out and long, you know, over a couple of weeks or the season, you know, or whatever. But, you know, a one-time thing or a bit, you know, a couple of times is not really bad. That can be just a racing incident or, you know, the reason, you know, one thing happens on the track or whatever, and then it's forgotten about, you know.
Drivers have long memories. And when I was a car owner, I was in a similar situation. A driver and another driver got into it, and it carried over, like you said, from week to week. One week he'd wreck us, and then we'd fix the car, come back and stuff him in the wall. And it finally came to a head one night. He turned us going down the front stretch, and we ended up slamming the inside wall pretty hard and everything, and we'd about had enough then. So the ensuing physical argument in the pits after that, the only time I've ever seen a race red flag because of a fight in the pits. They had to get all the officials down there to break it up. But
you're right. Yeah, I know.
Situations like that carry week to week.
Yeah. You know, if I could interject a little bit, my dad, back in the day when he was racing, his biggest rival was a guy named Paul Massieri, who had a – they were both very passionate about the sport. They both ran very, very hard. And I would say if there were 15, 20 races in a season, 15 or 20 of those races, they'd be getting into each other. And it was – the fans would go nuts. They would all have their either Paulie signs up or Cookie signs up. And they swore, the fans would swear that my dad and Paulie were absolute rivals. They were going to fist fight in the pits. What they didn't know is every Sunday morning, my dad and Paulie would be on the phone laughing about it and being at each other's house for either, you know, meatballs and spaghetti the next day on a Sunday, or they were friends off the track, like best friends. And on the track, they just ran hard as hell. But you know what? They both won a ton of races. Paulie was an absolute gentleman to my dad on the track, or actually after the track. On the track, they weren't gentlemen. After the track, when they'd sit in the, you know, they'd bring a bushel of clams, and my dad would break out a barbecue, and the two teams would pit next to each other, and it was great. And, you know, it's funny because when I tell my guys this, but Mike, you've seen us, but the team wears team uniforms. So on those uniforms, we're representing everybody's name that's on that uniform. Whether it's Applebee's, IGA, Tommy Baldwin Racing, Baldwin Automotive, Shore Mechanical, Applebee's, whatever it may be, the very first time you take a swing at somebody and it turns into a brawl, they're going to remember the guy with the Viscani Motorsports shirt on. They're not going to remember the other guys wearing T-shirts and shorts, you know? So that being said, from back in the day when my dad sat with us in the garage and Paulie's guys sat with his guys in the garage on Saturday morning, again, we're walking and talking billboards for the people that are giving us the opportunity to do what we love to do. So we had to, you know, I learned from an early age, it's not the best thing to be fighting or yelling or screaming or cursing, or, you know, it's best to either A, walk away, or like CJ does, if he has an issue on the track, he'll walk over to the driver or walk over to the official and speak like a gentleman, not yelling, not screaming, because, you know, it's the right way to do it. And that's another reason why I feel CJ is going to go a long way in this sport, because he's got the attitude of a champion, and someday we're going to have the trophy of a champion. But he's a great, I don't want to call him a kid because that's really wrong, but I'm twice his age, and to me he is a kid, but he's got a long history of wins way before he met me, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited for the future with him and his team, because he knows how to win. He knows how to lose. That's probably more important than knowing how to win. He's very humble. He's not a bragger. His actions on the track prove what he can do behind the wheel of a race car. And when he's off the track, his social actions, you know, we wrecked the car. The car was in a million pieces, and there were little kids coming over looking at the car and asking for CJ for an autograph. And he had a smile from ear to ear. You know, he was broken inside, but he was smiling ear to ear, taking pictures with the kids. That's the sign of a true champion, a guy that can take the good with the bad, not just the good. And it's funny because, and CJ laughs too, because every time he gets in the car, especially earlier in the season, I said to him, CJ, don't worry about wrecking the car. Just go out there and run it like you stole it, you know? So then the night that he wrecked, comes off the track, he's like, well, you told me you didn't care if I wrecked the car. I said, you didn't have to take me so literal, you know? But I think CJ's got a great future within the sport, and hopefully, you know, like I said, we stay together a very long time, very long time.
I just got to say, you know, I'm part of the CJ Lehman fan club, I guess. But I as I've told you, Steve, off the air a couple of times, I try to get along with everybody in the Riverhead Raceway pit area. And I've had luck in that. I can't say that anybody has ever denied me access if I wanted to ask a question for the column or whatever. But the interesting thing with CJ is some people go out of their way. And when we first hooked up years ago when he was running with his family car, I know he always said to me, because I went around in my chair from pit to pit, and he said, oh, come on over anytime, you know, we could sit and talk by the car, you know. And usually it's me going up to the driver asking them questions. CJ was like, anytime, just come by the car and we can sit and talk. And the driver is not the one usually that makes that overture, and CJ always was. And John is the same way. You know, I talked to John back when, you know, he was doing Legends all the time, too, and from that team. And like you said, the thing that was impressive to me is that he was always professional about, you know, even the crew looking professional with the uniforms, I think.
Yeah.
I think, John, you're the only team that actually wears, the whole crew wears uniforms, you know. Almost like the Spring Cup guys, you know.
But we are, you know, we do try to, like I said, the best way to promote your sponsors, you know, is to have them on your walking billboard. And,
right.
You know, it works both ways. You know, they help us to do what we love to do. And if we can give them back a little bit in the professionalism department and in the, you know, media attention department, you know, it works both ways. So as far as the uniforms are concerned, I don't think I've ever had a team, even back when I was racing go-karts, I had T-shirts made up from, you know, some local T-shirt guy that just had my number and my name on it, and everybody wore them. And it was considered a uniform back then. But you know what?
Right.
Nobody else had them. So, you know,
right.
that comes straight from my upbringing from my dad. Quick story, not to bore you with it, but we were racing at the Oxford 250 when my dad was racing back in 1980. And we broke a transmission or something and whatever. And my dad, you know, the crew had to wind up, you know, getting very greasy and dirty. And before the race, you know, they do the driver introductions, and nobody could find my father. And it was like 10 minutes before the driver introduction was supposed to happen. And all of a sudden, we see him running down behind the grandstands and up over the starter stand onto the track with a bag over his shoulder while we were changing the tranny or whatever we were changing. He was out at the local, you know, laundromat getting our uniforms cleaned so we looked good on pit road, you know. So
wow.
That kind of gives you an idea of how, you know, how important not only winning on the track or doing well on the track, but doing well off the track. And I have to tell you, it's, you know, from Legends till now, I've had a very good rapport with our sponsors because of the package that we put together, and CJ just brings it to the next level by, excuse my English, kicking ass on the racetrack, you know?
Yep, and I've seen CJ on video this year, and I'm used to him being around the blue car, but he kind of looks good in red, you know?
I see quite a few posts where you bring your car out to your sponsor's establishment and set it up like a show car. And that's a pretty neat deal, too, you know, that you get more exposure, you help bring customers in. So How did you get started with that? How did you realize, what made you realize that that was a good marketing tool for both the sponsor and your team?
Well, we make a promise to our sponsors. Not only do we promise them a legitimate race team on the racetrack every Saturday and that we try to promote them in the best way possible, but when I sit down with our prospective sponsors, normally October, November, maybe a little bit into December, you know, a lot of guys come up to me and say, how do you get these sponsors? How do you keep these sponsors? How do you get these new sponsors? You know what? The way I do it is, obviously the way we run our operation is something that people want to be, you know, involved with and like our operation. But in, like I said, October or November, our season is barely over. We still have races to go. And I'm sitting with my sponsors that are presently on board with us. And I tell them, listen, for this, you know, I don't tell people I need your money to go racing. I let people think, not think, but I try to instill in them that they're advertising with us. It's an advertisement. It's not a sponsorship. And with that advertisement, you know, our team uniforms, our trailer, our race car, our Facebook page, everything that we do, our hero cards, all have their logos on it. And what I try to tell them is, you know, for this particular package of sponsorship or advertising, we will bring the car to you X amount of times throughout the course of the season. And, you know, whether it's a fundraiser for your company or if it's a picnic or an outing or an employee day or just like Applebee's last week, we just pulled up in the parking lot, put up our tents, put up, you know, put the race car out there, and people that were coming into Applebee's, everyone walked over to the car, took a picture with CJ, and what was funny was we were appearing from 12 to 2:30. CJ calls me up and says on Friday night, I have an opportunity to drive a figure eight car Saturday at Riverhead. He goes, but I told him no because, you know, we have the appearance. I said, CJ, I appreciate that, but you know what? Leave the appearance a little bit early, a half hour early. No one's going to miss you.
Hey,
that was a joke, CJ. You can laugh anytime you're ready.
That's not cool, man.
That's not cool, man. And he went out, and you know, he had the respect to ask me as CJ and I are friends. I don't look at it as though car owner, driver, owner, this, that. I don't. We're a family. And when he called me up and asked me to go do that, I was like, absolutely, 100%, you go. But I do appreciate the respect of you asking me if you could do it. You know, to answer your question, I sit with them in a meeting a couple of times before the season starts, each one of my sponsors, and ask them what they want out of us for what they're giving us to go racing. And that's kind of what it comes down to.
I heard that. CJ, how old are you?
I am 25.
Well, not bad, not bad. Here lately, every time I talk to a driver, they're 14 and 15. And that
I used to be one of those 14-year-old drivers.
Yeah. How did you get started? How old were you when you started? And what runs did you use to climb the ladder, so to speak?
Well, I started like many other kids on Long Island. I started racing a go-kart. I was about 10 years old. At a small track in Medford. A couple years later, my family relocated to Pennsylvania, and at 15, I started driving a street stock type car. I raced that for about three seasons, and then we moved back to Long Island. At that point, I started driving a Charger, which is glorified street stock, if you will. Stock chassis, you know, three link is basically the big difference there. Ran that for a while. Messed around in the figure eight division at Riverhead for a couple years, which I think was a big stepping stone in my career. If anybody out there, anywhere in the country, ever gets the opportunity to drive a figure eight car at any track that runs figure eight, you should do it. It is the hardest type of race car I've driven, and turning right teaches you a lot more than making two consecutive lefts every lap. So, you know, just as far as control and how you have to slide the car up the corner with those things. So, and then this winter, I got in touch with John, and we put together this deal, and it's been awesome. You know, we have a beautiful race car. We've had success to an extent. We've had some mishaps this year. John stated earlier in the show that we broke a motor on opening night. We bounced back and finished third that night. We had a stuck throttle, as we talked about. That was a big hit. This past week, the car was on rail in the second race after being, and we had a little issue with our transmission on restart. We were actually leading the race, so you know the whole program is on point. John has a great deal going with myself and my team and my sponsors on top of his sponsors. We've really put something good together, I think. And some of our results this year with the crash and this past week with the transmission mishap, you know, the results haven't necessarily showed, but we've been a top three team just about every single week.
I heard that. As far as the future, are you satisfied with the level you've reached now, or how high do you want to go racing?
I don't think any driver is ever satisfied where they're at. You know, there's always a bigger race to win, always somewhere else to go, a different type of race car to drive. You know, I want to take it as far as I can possibly take it. You know, if that means that I am where I am, then that's what it is. That's my fate. But I think with John and the product that we have, all of our backing, Alton Automotive and Swim Mechanical, Applebee's, DJ Alpin, Bottle Hampton, you know, everybody, I think we can definitely move forward and continue to climb the ladder. How high? I don't know. You know, that there's a lot of variables in this sport, and only time will tell where we actually end up. Hopefully it's higher up than it is now, though.
Well, Mike, you've been following CJ for quite a while. How high do you think he's capable of going?
I really, you know, John and I were talking about this on my show last week. And the interesting thing is, the first thing I asked him was, you know, not next year maybe, because he's only been, you know, CJ's only been in modified 1 year with the crate mod debuting at Riverhead this year. But, you know, we were talking about the possibility, he was telling me about the possibility of going tour modified and possibly later on into the rail and modified tour, where you go from track to track and so forth. And I really think that CJ is one of those people, again, drivers that, and we said it on my show many times, and we said it when I was co-hosting your show and had guys from Long Island come on, guys like Timmy Salamito, who runs the tour now, and Tommy Rogers, et cetera. And, you know, there are guys that are going to go higher. You know, and I really see CJ's one of those people, like the Turbo Shoes, or where people, in the next sentence, they're going, well, he can win in anything he straps into. And I really feel that CJ is one of those people. And paired up with John and the team, they can go as high as they want to. I really see them going, you know, at least four modified races. And we had, you know, we had a situation with you know, teams that, you know, they say, I'd like to go higher, I'd like to go to the next division, and it doesn't really pan out for them. But my experience covering Long Island, and I know a lot of guys that go up. Now we have a situation now with Riley Priest, who comes and races on Long Island, modified, and goes to Connecticut because his hometown is in Connecticut. And then he races on Long Island and is also in the Xfinity Series. So, I mean, should DJ want to go into, you know, Xfinity, I guess he could go, you know, eventually there too. And especially with the tie-in with Tommy Baldwin, you know. But Brian Priest is doing that now. So, you know.
The Tommy Baldwin racing, does that open any doors to you to move up to a higher series? And would you consider stepping through that door?
I don't know if you broke up a little. Was that for me or was that for John?
For John.
I'm sorry, Steve. Yeah, it was breaking up a little bit. Only the future, you know, the future is the future. You really can't determine what's going to happen, but I think the program that we put together with CJ as the driver and my wife Marie and I co-owning the team, we do have aspirations of moving up the NASCAR ladder, and if the opportunity did arise down the road where we could move it to the next level, we absolutely will, and CJ and I and the rest of the team have discussed a couple of months back. Remember, CJ, when we were in your garage speaking about the future, you know, things don't happen overnight, and you have to kind of set the seed early before somebody else, you know, plants that tree, so to speak. So I've already done things on my end, and CJ knows about them, but I wasn't going to take that leap without knowing that CJ and his dad and Mike Lemura and Timmy Halpin and the rest of the guys were going to be behind us, because I can't bring a package to a boardroom if I don't have the right people behind me on my end of the program. You know, I sit with a lot of corporate people that are interested in seeing us go to the next level, as well as the people that are on board with us now, IGA, Tommy Baldwin, Applebee's. But again, you know, the higher the level you go, the more financial backing you need, the more time away from home you need, the more equipment you need. You know, there's a lot. It's easy to say I want to go tour racing next year, and then when you actually get ready to go do it, you're like, wow, I really bit off more than I can chew. If you have the right backing, it makes it. You know, there is nobody that I know of that got on the tour the first season and felt it was easy to do, no matter how much backing you have. You know, we got into this Great Mod division, and, you know, jumping up from the Legends division, to me that was a monumental step. But again, I, you know, made sure all my T's were crossed and my I's were dotted before I made that happen. And then when it happened, you can see where we are. You know, we have a pretty successful team. We're consistently fast. The crew is the crew, and my driver is my driver. We have a good package. And like Tommy said, you know, you got to conquer certain areas of the divisions that you're in before you move to the next level. Otherwise, you're just going to get swallowed up because everybody wants to do it. So to answer your question in short, if we have the right opportunities to move forward, CJ will 100% be moving forward with my team and getting to the next level. He's in. He's done. He ain't leaving. I know where he lives, and he cannot leave me. It's that simple. I'm not giving up on him. Definitely. Hey. Right, CJ, you know the rules, right?
You can't be showing up at his door like a bill collector, huh?
Yep. So that's the long story short. Yes, we will eventually, with all the right parts and pieces, move into another division, and hopefully, you know, we're as successful as we are now with this division. And that's, you know, what are you thinking, CJ? You feel the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I just said, you keep putting my name on the roof of your race car, I'll keep driving it. You know, and the financial part of it is the biggest part of it, as in any level of this sport. You know, there's guys that are sitting home on Sundays that could probably be in Sprint Cup cars because they couldn't secure the financial backing. And, you know, that goes for us moving forward as well. You know, racing on NASCAR Wheel Modified Tour is not cheap. And, you know, neither is what we're doing right now. We have the people behind us at this point in time to do what we're doing. You know, if we can secure further backing and move forward, I'm in. You know, put a motor and wheels on any car, I'll drive it. So
there you go.
And I got to tell you something else too, because you know, everybody has things on pen and paper these days and contracts. And, you know, CJ and I and his dad sat down one night, did a handshake, and that was it. And everything they promised me has come to fruition, and everything I promised them has come to fruition. Everything was done on a handshake, and that just goes to show you that, you know, you can sit with all these corporate guys all day long, and when it comes down to friendship and family, that's what we have with CJ and his, you know, his deal and his dad and whatnot. And Marie and I are glad and proud that he's in the seat for us.
Yeah, definitely. So let's take some time here, John, and give a shout out to anybody you want to recognize, your sponsors, your family, your shop dog, anybody you want to recognize.
Well, my shop dog is Lola, but that's another whole story. the one person that I have to tell you that comes to mind first, because he's monumental to everybody in not only our division but every division at Riverhead, is Dennis Freeze from Oval Speed Shops. I don't think that there would be a third of the cars out there that are out there now if Dennis wasn't as generous as he is, you know, with his business, and us included. You know, we wrecked the car on Saturday night, and Dennis was like one of the first guys over. He's like, John, whatever you need, we'll get it done. You know, so Dennis Freeze is literally first and foremost one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, and if it wasn't for him, you know, a lot of guys would not be racing right now. As far as other people in my camp, I've mentioned, you know, obviously Tommy Baldwin, Mr. Charles Reichert from IGA, Applebee's, which is the Doherty group. We have Bottle Hampton. We have Crate Inside of a lady named Kate Dillon from Down Your Way, Steve, has been very helpful with us. TJ Halpins are always supplying us with either food, drink, or fuel. Long Island Truck Parts, Performance Synthetics with our AMSOIL. You know, Joe Schaefer from down in Florida, who works with Koenig Wheels. You know, guys that just literally call me up and say, John, we know you wrecked the car. Here's $100. You know, you got Georgie Fuco. You have George Riley. You have Robert Fuco. You got guys that just, you know, and we put their names on the car. You know, Handy Pantry, Pizza Time. There's guys that are out there that, you know, it may be small in the whole scope of our program, but every little bit helps. You know, and
yeah,
it, you know, we'll never say no to a sponsorship deal, but there's things that, you know, go beyond sponsorships, which is friendship. And if a guy turns around and says, John, you know, I want you to put this towards your team. It may only be $50, but maybe it'll pay for, you know, some fuel tonight. Those are the types of guys that keep us in business, you know, as well as our big corporate guys. So those guys are just as important as anyone else. And my dad, you know, I want to mention my dad. He's been around a long, long time. He's a lot of fun to be around, especially when he's on his medicine the right way. When he's not, it's a bit of a handful. And our newest and crew member, he's helping take a lot of the weight off of my shoulder, is Bill Goffin. He's from over in Staten Island, and he was with the crew, Ronnie Mullins' team, over at Wall Speedway, and him and I became friends. And the next season, he's been with me for the most of this season, but next season he's going to be 100% with me on the managerial end of my team, because he's got a brilliant mind, he's very good with business, and it takes a little weight off of my shoulders to secure other things that we need to secure when he can handle, you know, take some of the weight off my shoulders. And, of course, I got to mention my wife, Marie, because she's the one that's really letting this whole thing come together and, you know, not complaining where she has to go to a communion party and I'm out at the racetrack. So that being said, that's my 2 cents worth, and I'll let CJ take over from here.
Yeah, CJ, take some time to recognize anybody you want to.
Well, first and foremost, I got to thank John and the real boss, Marie, for letting me drive the beautiful piece of equipment that they put out there for me every week. You know, the rest of the guys,
that are on the crew. Cookie is, you know, sort of like a driving coach, you know, a cheerleader for us, and he really gets me pumped up each and every week. My dad, without him, not only would that car not have made it back to the racetrack after the wreck, but he probably wouldn't go to the racetrack as well as does every single week, because when there's stuff to be done in the race car, I don't think he can sleep. Fat Pat, Rich Lane, Brian Quilliam, Tim Halpin, our crew chief, Mike Lemura, Isaiah Alden, my girlfriend, Cheyenne, my dad's girlfriend, Desiree, Bill Goffin, as John mentioned, and his girlfriend, Jeanette, comes out and supports. So all of our team, tight-knit group, you know, thank you all for putting your faith behind me. You know, some of our sponsors, like John mentioned, without Tommy Baldwin, I would not be in this race car. So, you know, a huge thank you goes out to Tommy and all that he's done with for me throughout my career, whether it was my own family car, you know, up to what we're doing now with John. Shore Mechanical, Dave Newen, been helping me out for years now. Great backing. IGA, Long Island Truck Parts, TJ Halpin, Andy Pantry, Pizza Time, as John said before, Applebee's, Bottle Hampton, Performance Synthetics, Crate Insider, Brad over at Northeast for building killer race cars and repairing them to be just the same as they were. And Oval Speed, without Oval Speed, like John said, our car probably wouldn't have gotten back together as quick as possible. So follow us on Facebook over at Visconti Motorsports, our Facebook page. Keep up to date on what we're doing. Follow me on my Facebook page, DJ Lehman. You know, get a look into my world.
There you go. John Visconti, CJ Lehman, I do appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Y'all still got a little racing left to do here before your season ends, but I would like to get you back on after your season and sum up everything as how it's been and everything. I really like talking with you guys. It's always a pleasure, and I thank you for coming on my show.
It's been our pleasure, Steve. Thank you very much. Like I had said, anytime you want us to sit in and talk with you guys about our plans, we'd love to. You have a great show. Mike, thanks for introducing us to Steve. And,
yes.
You know, we wish you guys well, and give us a little postseason interview. We'll let you know how the rest of the season made out.
And like
there you go.
I got to say, John, Steve's helping me with something, and you got to help me when I get back also. I finally got my new chair. So
you want us to set it up
back,
for you? You want us to set it up for you, make
you
go faster?
When I get back, Steve's helping me with Stagger, and you guys got to mount a motor for me.
I tell you what.
I'll
make you a deal.
Motor for me.
I'll make you a deal. You put a Visconti Motorsports sticker on your wheelchair, and I'll have CJ push you around in his fire suit wearing an afro. How's
there
that?
You go. There you go.
How did I get involved in this?
Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure talking to all you guys. Thank you so much.
CJ,
thank you.
Thank
you. All right, guys, people, that was John Visconti, car owner, and CJ Lehman, driver. They're a really great group of guys. They got a real top-notch organization, and I wish them all the best. Now, before we get out of here, let's go around the room, and we'll talk about what everybody's got going on and everything. On Monday nights here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, you can catch myself and Mr. CJ Sports on Rubbing is Racing, where we talk about the previous weekend NASCAR races. We'll certainly be talking about Richmond on Monday and the Chase lineup. So check that out, 7 o'clock on Monday nights. As today, 9 o'clock on Thursday nights, we do Racing with Big Sweat, the local short track scene. And I've been invited to be a guest on Mr. Craig Moore's show, the NASCAR Roundup, that is on Maverick Radio. We're going to break down the chase and talk about each individual drivers, and it's a good opportunity for me to get on the other side of the table, so to speak, instead of asking the questions, I'll be answering them. So check that out, Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. I've got a busy week going, and I have a Facebook group, NASCAR and Other Racing. We're 7,000 members strong, and it's the best damn Facebook racing group out there. Come check us out. Join the group. We do excellent group race threads for all the televised racing, be it NASCAR, IHRA, Formula One, IndyCars. If it's on television, we're going to talk about it. So check that out. And last but not least, I haven't been doing it lately. I've been having some health issues, but I'll get it back up this week. I have a blog that I put out every Tuesday called NASCAR Shit, Racing with Big Sweat, and I'll give you a more unadulterated view of what happened this past weekend. So unless I owe you money, if you want to find me, that you'll find me at one of those places. What have you got going on, CJ?
We know I got a whole bunch of stuff going on. First of all, if you guys missed last night's show, the 110 Nation Sports Show here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, we had Mark Rhett of Rhett Jones Racing, and Allie Owens is making her her Xfinity Series debut Friday night at Richmond. We had both of those on last night. We actually went about 2 hours and 40 minutes last night. So if you want to hear some great racing talk, you guys need to check that show out. Saturday, for those that are going to be in the Bristol, baby, area, I will be at the Tennessee Virginia Tech. They turned the infield into a football field. They're talking about 150,000 strong going to be out there. It's going to be loud. I will be out there. If you guys want to catch up with me, just let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at CJSports1. Next week, or the following weekend, I will be in Charlotte for the NHRA Countdown to the Championship. Got an opportunity to have Erica Enders, two-time Pro Stock champion, on the show a couple weeks ago. She promised me I could sit in the car if I ever caught up with her. Well, next weekend, the weekend of the 16th, I will be catching up with her so I can sit in that car. And then the following week, the Xfinity Series and Arca Series will be in Kentucky, and we'll be out there to hang out with those guys and have a blast with that as well. Make sure you guys check out the 110 Nation Sports Show every Monday through Wednesday at 8 p.m. and check out our Facebook group or our Facebook page, 110 Nation Sports, and check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com.
There you go. And Mike, last but not least, tell us what you got going on.
Okay, well, tomorrow night, my show, Hot Laps with Stats, I'm going to have a gentleman that was introduced to me through another guest. Earlier in the season, we had Jim Williams, who is a member of the New England Racing Hall of Fame. It's the Antique Racers, and they run a Hall of Fame. And tomorrow night, the president's going to be on the show and talking about voting for the 2016 inductees to their Hall of Fame, which is New England, and Long Island has one as well. But the one that Jim introduced me to was the New England Hall of Fame. And that, Steve, you would be interested in, because Mario Fiore was the one who was one of the inductees a couple of years ago. And they do a great job with their group and a separate Hall of Fame where they have, I think it's said on their website, like something like 260 members that they've already inducted. And so we'll be talking to them about their 2016 inductees tomorrow night. I also help CJ basically all week long now, which I love, helping him out with his show, and then also writing articles and blogs over on the site, golf, and I'm also mentoring a young man who's doing yeoman's work. He sends me a story probably every second day on NASCAR and racing. And so I've got my hand in everything, and I appreciate you, Steve, because I'm a member of your group, and not only a member, I'm an administrator. And I think back, and it's funny, I've said to CJ, too, on many occasions, the first person I have to thank is not you, meaning CJ, although I do thank him for giving me all the opportunities. You, Steve, are the person that started the whole thing, because you approached me, I guess, back in February or March of this year, this last year, and said, how would you like to co-host my show? And when you decided to go into dirt racing, basically, you knew that I was like you and more into the asphalt, and you asked me to step aside, and that led to me getting my own show. So you actually started this, and I really appreciate everything you've helped me with and to get me started in this whole endeavor. But I'm really getting into it now, and I was into it before, but I'm into it more now. And we have a ball with it between the 110 Nation and the group. And like you said, the race threads, I'm basically into everything, and I'm enjoying it, and I owe it all to you, my man. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much. You've taken the ball and run with it well, Mike. I congratulate you on that. Well, people, let's head out of here. Time to get a cold one as far as I'm concerned. I appreciate you tuning in very much. I'm very appreciative of our audience. I also want to thank personally Mr. Jimmy Haywood, the man behind my sponsor, Snafu Seasoning, an excellent spice blend. Sorry, I'm breaking in a new tongue tonight. A good grill rub, so check it out. You can go to www.snafuseasoning.com. That's S-N-A-F-U. Thank you very much, Jimmy. Thank you, Mike, for sitting in tonight on short notice. Thank you, CJ, for putting on this great show. And we're out of here, folks. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.